the start of a 12-date US tour. It's all too beautiful.
The headlines again. The Independent Institute for Fiscal Studies has described the cuts in public spending that could result from yesterday's autumn statement as colossal. The Chancellor, George Osborne, insisted the government had shown that it had managed to reduce spending without damaging public services. The former Liberal leader, Jeremy Thorpe, who oversaw the resurgence of his party but whose political career ended in scandal, has died aged 85. The body of a baby girl has been found close to that of her mother 2 days after they disappeared from a maternity hospital in Bristol. The Court of Appeal has rejected a claim for criminal damages for a child born with disabilities because of her mother's excessive drinking during pregnancy. BBC News.
Neil Sleat. We've the beginning of the band Squeeze from the point of view of musician and founder member Chris Difford when he reveals the horrors of his teenage diary to Rufus Hound. Right after this.
It's a simple, three-cornered exploration of one life nominated by another.
Matthew Paris celebrates great lives.
You'll learn a lot about not just the great life, but quite a bit about the enthusiast and the reasons for their enthusiasm.
I was a great fan of running, and I was a great fan of Zatopek, Zatopek. Emil Zatopek, the Czech runner, they used to chant his name as he struggled his way in an ungainly fashion up the home straight.
Join me, Matthew Paris, for Great Lives next Tuesday afternoon at 4:30 on BBC Radio 4.
And welcome to My Teenage Diary, the show that invites brave celebrities to squint through the mists of time and ask themselves, did I actually go out looking like that? As they read their teenage diaries aloud for the very first time, can they recognise themselves when they look back? Have they remained true to their youthful ideals? Will they experience the warm glow of nostalgia or the hot flush of embarrassment? My guest tonight is a singer and songwriter, best known as a founder member of the band Squeeze and one half of the partnership Difford and Tilbrook. That's what he's like now, but please, let's find out what he was like way back then as we welcome Chris Difford!
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being here. Which diaries are you going to be reading from today?
1974, which was the last years of my teenage years on this planet.
Lovely. Oh, so we are really 19, getting the...
Yeah. The dregs.
The full strength yeah. of teen angst.
Yeah.
Could you describe them for us?
My diaries in those days were mainly stolen from Boots the chemist. And they all looked the same. And inside there was doodles, drawings and, you know, all sorts of things. And people that I was living with around that time used to also put things in. So, like, Jules Holland would add comments to some of the things that I would say.
Could you tell us a bit about your life at the time of this diary?
Well, 19 years old, I just met Glenn, and we sort of started living together in his girlfriend's house, Maxine. And we were in South London in Blackheath, if I can say it like that, Blackheath.
Yeah.
Because that's how I would have talked back then. Yeah, it was a really magical, mysterious time. I put an ad in a sweet shop window for 50p. Glenn was the only person to answer that ad. And here we are 41 years later and we're still writing songs.
It's pretty remarkable.
It's a mystery.
I heard that when you put the advert in the window, you were secretly hoping David Bowie would reply to it because he lived around that way. Is that
Well, no, he lived in Beckenham, but I was looking for a guitarist and David Bowie would be the last guitarist I'd be looking for.
Yeah. So, it's 1974. The Conservative government introduces the three-day week. Tom Baker becomes the fourth doctor. And the very first UK McDonald's opens. And in the first hour alone, over 600 people had just nipped in to use the loo. But what is Chris Difford doing?
Monday, January the 14th, 1974. It says here, work was okay. Had a bath. funny about that? Went over to Glenn's and just sat there and we played tapes. What a laugh. Wrote some lyrics and came home. I used to just write lyrics all the time. It was just something that I loved. And then it goes on to say, but I'm at crisis point. My ego is intoxicating me. I reckon I'll have to stop it before it ruins me. It keeps asking questions and then I'm answering them. I'm so confused. Tuesday the 15th. Work was fine. Came home and went over to number four. Number four was the number of the house that Glenn, Maxine and myself lived in Blackheath. Listened to some more tapes. Glenn decides that it's not good enough. Shall we scrap it or not? Who knows? I must get down to see The Two Maids, a play that's on at the Greenwich Theatre, starring Susanna York, kiss, 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 kiss. And Glenda Jackson, my other fave, but not as much. I can't wait to see it.
I mean, these are your first two entries in the 1974 diary. You're already at crisis point.
Yes.
Often people try and give themselves a bit of a run-in and, you know, start January trying to feel a bit more optimistic. But why crisis point?
I don't know. I was always pretty tense in those days. And, you know, I was never completely at home with myself. But with years of therapy, I've decided that I'm a much better person than I thought.
Yes. Well, you seem all right from here.
Good.
is there a degree of teenage melodrama in this?
Yes, I think there is. But then, you know, there were times when being suicidal is just a way of getting attention.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, there was a time when I was so depressed that I took some sleeping pills and then I went into my room and put a wardrobe up against the door so that no one could get in. But then I thought, well, no one knows that I'm going to die. So I took the wardrobe away. And then no one could hear me crying and stuff. So I opened the door.
Right.
And then no one could still hear me. So I went downstairs. By which time I'd fallen asleep.
We thought it may have been a cry for help, but it turns out he was just tired.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the early days of, you know, being in a band, of working with Glenn.
Why wouldn't I be depressed?
Yeah.
But the great thing is there was also a balance between that and also the excitement of being around people that could play and, you know, write songs. And being around Glenn, who was an absolutely genius talent, you know, when we first met and meeting Jules for the first time. I'd never, you know, I'd lived on a council estate and I'd never met anybody with that kind of talent. So it was brilliant. It was really great. So even though there was darkness, there was a huge amount of light too.
Okay, well, we'll carry on with the diary then. March 12th.
Oh, I feel really ill, like death warmed up. I bought the double Beatles album, went to bed. Kept collapsing on the floor. Made it over to number four, but Glenn pissed me off. Effing cat had a stroke. Went up to London to play Tony, Mike and John some new songs. Now, Tony, Mike and John were our managers at this point. I don't know what happened to them apart from John Layton. And just as an off story, John Layton had a brand new car and he dropped us off at Waterloo Station. And I opened the door and a National Express bus came by and took the door off. That was our first meeting with our manager. It was brilliant. But I felt like I was a wreck most of the time. I felt worse. But who cared? I reckon that things don't change. Then I feel like splitting up from Glenn and from the rest of them. He could do it much better on his own anyway. I can't see this lasting. Good night. It's funny how I was at wit's end with Glenn there. It's kind of a little bit odd.
I really love a man, and that man's name is Steve.
Mm.
And I met that man when I was 14, and we were both on the football pitch at school.
Fantastic.
While everyone else was actually playing football, we were busy making each other laugh at the idea that we might be playing football.
Yeah.
It's a really dopey thing, but he is as close as I would think I'll ever really get to a soulmate. You know? Is that a similar thing with you and Glenn, do you think?
Or no.
No. No.
And it's kind of odd because, you know, for the last 40 years, we've kind of not really known each other, but we've written tons of songs.
Right.
And in the last year, we've been rehearsing to go out on tour to do what's called the At Odds Couple Tour. It's just the two of us playing songs. And we've been sitting in a rehearsal room and... one day I was sitting with Glenn and I said, we haven't played anything yet. And he said, no, we're just rehearsing being in the same room. And that's, which I thought was a genius quote, and that's kind of where we are after all these years. I mean, he's been the most constant in my world.
Yeah.
Kind of weird. In a nice way.
Well, I hope it's in a nice way, because otherwise you're trapped in a deeply abusive relationship.
Yeah. And I will be in therapy for the rest of my life.
You've gone up to London to play to a potential manager, and yet you're talking about splitting with the band. You say he could do it better on his own.
I always felt partly in Glenn's shadow because he's such a talent, you know. And when we first met, we could go to a party together. He'd get a guitar out, stand on a table and play like loads of different songs in a kind of... He was the Cliff Richard the band in many, many ways. whereas I would sit sort of on the sofa in the corner of the room writing poetry, hoping girls would look at me thinking, how deep is that man?
Did that ever work?
Twice. And then they realised he wasn't deep at all. It's just sad.
Yeah. Has anyone got a rhyme for knickers? Well, let's continue then with April the 12th, please.
It's Good Friday. Had a bath and Jules had a bath again.
These are clearly momentous occasions. Yeah. They need diarising.
Yeah. Had a bath and Jules drove me down to Benenden in Kent on his motorbike. Benenden in Kent is where our sort of second home was. Maxine, who was Glenn's girlfriend's parents, had a beautiful Tudor house down in the country, and it was like open house for us as kids. They were very liberal with her parents, and we could just go down there. So we did. And we drank all of their sherry and all their wines and all their cheese. It was brilliant. Really nice, fast, long ride along the A21. Lost my sunglasses, which just came off my head. Went to the pub in the evening, got chucked out because of my studded leather jacket. Dear, oh dear, Jules is a really mad driver. Sunday the 14th, got up, cleared up. Came home to London on the bike with Jules. As we got into London, we got stopped by the pigs. And they took us to the Nick, and we got charged. Jules is 16 years old, no driving licence, no tax, no MOT, no insurance, and me for aiding and abetting. Sad but true. So we had to wheel Jules' bike back to his house where we watched Yellow Submarine.
I mean, when you describe Jules as a really mad driver, what you actually mean is really mad, uninsured, untaxed motorcycle with no MOT and no licence, who's only 16. Yeah. Did you even bother wearing a helmet?
No, we didn't. We didn't. And I remember the lady police officer stood out in the middle of the road with her hand up like that, and I was obviously sitting behind Jules. I said, ignore her, ignore her. So we drove straight past. And then at the next traffic light, they pulled a van across and we couldn't do anything but stop. You know? So it was really funny.
I mean, largely you've just laughed this off, haven't you? Were there any ramifications to this?
It wasn't the first time I'd been hauled over by the pigs. So I had history.
You had form.
I had form, yeah. And it wouldn't be the last time that me and Jules had been arrested for stupidity. I remember being in the cell with Jules, and to pass the time we played off-ground touch, but there was only one chair.
For anyone not familiar with the rules of off-ground touch, that is...
You have to be off the ground, and then you have to touch the other person, and they have to, you know, it's... If you're a kid, you'll understand this. Maybe not these days, I don't know.
Unless there's an app for it, they've got no idea what you're talking about. What did your mum and dad think about you getting into these sorts of scrapes?
Oh, they never really knew about me getting into scrapes because I'd kind of left home by this point. My mum worked in the local police station... And there was one occasion, which isn't written here, but I'll just tell you briefly, that I was at somebody's house and there was a drugs raid, and I got hoisted out by the police and put in the back of a car. We drove up onto Blackheath and they stopped the car and they said, your mum won't be impressed when we tell her. And that was it. They opened the door and I got out. So I was petrified. I thought, my God, either I'm going to get nicked or they're going to tell my mum what's the worst that could happen.
Well, we'll continue on to Thursday, April 18th.
Oh, it's a letter to myself. Dear Chris, look here. It's all blown up out of proportion, yeah? Mummy and Daddy don't want you to be a pop star. God, what a word. I cried and I'll cry again because I love the way I feel. The chauffeur of words driving them around and around in my head. The people I have hurt have helped me. In a way, I could thank them. I'm not sad, because I am happy. Sitting here behind my long face, watching everybody's every move, seeing how people react and how people don't, and now the chauffeur feels terrified of tomorrow. I can't love you, so please hurt me, so I can forget you and carry on. Love, Chris. That's deep.
It is deep.
Almost got a round of applause for that.
Yeah, yeah. It continues.
Friday the 19th. Woke up feeling much the same, but had a little talk with Maxine and I felt much better. Thursday the 25th. I'm fully nude while I'm writing this. Well, today we saw the birth of a new rock and roll band. We were rehearsed from 3 o'clock till midnight. John Layton, our manager, paid us. We got £5 each. Our first wage as a group. And the band's name is going to be The Kids. A terrible name. Thursday, May the 2nd. I used to write poetry in my diary, so this is one of them. I made my bed at 12 o'clock. I find a hole inside my sock. I spent the day with grace and ease and fell asleep again, you see. Phil and Mark came round at 9 with 20 fags and a bottle of wine. I had a talk with dearest Max and told her all the love I lacked. I like to talk my ills with her because girls know what the boys prefer. Recording now is Friday next. I hope the kids will do their best. Harry, Paul, Glenn and Jules, I'll tell you that I'm not a fool. And sleep is near and out the light. I send my love to you. Good night.
Now, as you can imagine, we are fans of teenage poetry on this show.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it's much harder to mock it when you're talking to someone who made a career largely out of writing it. There's lots in that that's really so lovely.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's you formed the kids, you've been paid £5 each. You're on your way, aren't you? I mean, this is really happening.
It is really happening, I think. I don't remember much about what ideas they had for us as managers, although they were rather keen that we wore leather trousers, which we weren't that bothered about as long as we didn't have to pay for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was good days. It felt that was the first time when we felt like we were actually in a band and we were going off to make an album.
Lovely. All right, well, we will continue.
Okay, so now it's June the 3rd. Woke up around 1 or 2. That nice boy Glenn pouring cold water over me. The phones don't work, which puts a stick in the spokes. Did a bit of shopping, called Nikki from the telephone box. She dreamt about me. Later, Nikki came over. I told her about my dreams. She's nice, kiss, 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 kiss. Saw her onto the train and made some dinner. Friday the 7th. It's Nikki's birthday. I hug and kiss her and can hardly resist her because she's part of me. I love her like a baby. She makes me go all crazy. Got up and did a lot. Wired up almost the whole house and made some radio tapes. Then waited for my darling Nikki. Lots of cards and happy birthday tape. She loved it. Makes you feel warm inside. We had a kiss and a cuddle and we put her on the train at 13 minutes past 10. I love to hold her and I feel so new and good, and that's love, I guess. And then there's a little poem here. So little can mean so much when you say it to the one you love. It's all mad, that is mad. All is love, which is love. All is life, if it's life. All is you, that is me. And with my eyes I see that together we will be. I've never been so in love, and I love her forever. Just you wait and see.
When someone says, I'll love her forever, just you wait and see in a teenage diary, a strange sense of foreboding comes over me. I wonder how this will work out.
Tuesday, June 25th. Went up to Bieber's in London for a job, and I got it as a porter. Start Monday, 28 quid a week. It's only for 2 weeks, so that's cool. Met Nikki and her sister. We went down the pub, and she kissed me more tonight. I really would like to know where I stand. I was going to buy her a Mark Bolan album today, but money can't buy love. Tell me, where do I stand? Are we still hard, hugging, squeezes, full of love? What is the truth? Anyone else who reads this, read on and see the next episode. Meanwhile, don't be bloody nosy. This is my secret record of my life. This is my list of close friends who could read this if they ask. Nikki, Glenn, Max, Eric, Mark, and that's all.
Although, maybe you should expand that list to include Rufus Hound, a large studio audience, and the countless millions listening on Radio 4. Oh, yeah.
Friday, June the 28th. Work was okay. I got me pay. Jules got a job at Bieber today playing the piano. Talented, lucky sod. But it's good. So three of us at Bieber now. Nikki came over and the rest of us went down the pub. She didn't. We said goodbye. I'm single again. Must get a girl, but I love Nikki.
Well, we did wait and see.
Mm.
But it's not panned out. So who was Nikki?
Nikki Perry was... Oh, I've just given her name away. She's actually a very dear friend, and she wasn't my girlfriend for very long. It didn't kind of work out. But she was Glenn's girlfriend for a couple of years.
Oh, really? What, after this?
Yes, yeah.
Shortly after this?
Fairly shortly, yeah.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
Were you particularly unlucky in love?
Yeah, it's true to say I was, yeah. The band was really the woman that I wanted to be with,
yeah.
You know, and that was it. And it's true to say that as the band got successful and as we grew up, you know, the first one to get married was me. And that was like the beginning of the end for most of the other members of the band. You know, it was kind of weird.
Yeah. So much interesting stuff in this. So you worked at Bieber.
Yeah, it was a great job working in the storeroom. You know, it was a new shop and it was like full of great things.
I mean, it was kind of the centre of British fashion for
it was.
A little while, wasn't it?
It was. But I famously left because I went in with an empty guitar case one day. And I went into the storeroom, I opened the empty guitar case and I filled it full of gold lighters and then got on the train with this really heavy guitar case, went to a pub in South London and flogged them all.
And did they find out?
No, but I just phoned in sick. I didn't have the bottle to go back.
All right, well, we will continue. In July 1975.
Okay. We were called the Kids. And then we realised that, you know, when we're 70 years old, it ain't going to sound very good being called the Kids.
No.
So we thought of another name, and the name was Squeeze. The group Squeeze might be doing things soon, one way or another. We play the Marquee soon. That should be a good break for us. Lots of important ears will be there to hear us. Music means so much to me. It says everything I ever feel. There must be a song for every feeling I have. Without music, life would be pretty empty. I hope I write songs for somebody's feelings. I just lit my second fag and my last in this pub. All I need to do now is face the music and later face love. I so often get them mixed up. Other guys don't get in so much trouble. This book is like a friend. You can tell it everything. We are going to rehearse, go on the road and then record. The band are all in a good mood, even Paul, who was our drummer and a bit of a grumpy git. Perhaps one day I'll be able to look back at this page and remember how it all began. And now for the future, maybe there will be a lineup change, the drummer. Obviously, Glenn and I will remain the founding members of the band as we write all the songs. Jules and Paul are pretty fab too. Squeeze begins its life.
So, I mean, this is a really big moment, isn't it?
It's pivotal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that gig at the Marquee?
Oh, God, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah?
And we played there many, many times. I walked past it the other day. It's gone, of course. But, you know, the vibe in that club was just brilliant. It was scary.
And it was the making of a lot of bands and stars of that time. And if you played the Marquee, that was...
It was.
That was the rubber stamp of approval, wasn't it?
It was indeed. And we always seemed to be the band that you would want to support, for instance. The Jam supported us.
They did all right, didn't they?
They did all right. XTC, Dire Straits, who we thought were shit at the time.
Right.
Went on and sold millions of albums. The Police... I mean, the list goes on, and we're still on the stage, you know.
You talked about a potential change in the lineup of the band. Were there signs of tension at this early stage?
There was tension around the bass and the drums. They weren't quite right. And that was something that did get changed after the first album. Our wonderful bass player, Harry, was sacked and to be replaced by the wonderful John Bentley, who's been with us ever since, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this diary charted the start of the band that made you famous, Squeeze. But as a songwriter, you must have wondered whether that diary would sound better as a song. Well, wonder no longer, as I give you Chris Difford's diary as performed by Squeeze.
Year-old, just an average sort of bloke. A Susanna York fixation and a cat who's had a stroke. I've no idea what caused it, and neither's my mate Glenn. I know cats have got 9 lives, but mine really needed 10. So now I'm spending money down the pet shop once again. I've studied all the data and examined all the stats, but I'm still none the wiser why I always lose my cats. I lose my cats. To change the mood a little, I've been riding round with Jules. His motorbike's a death trap and his driving breaks the rules. The mystery of my kitty has helped me to unlock. He said last week he passed my house with 90 on the clock. His engine then backfired and my cat, it died of shock. They said revenge tastes better when you serve it as cold snacks. So I've told the cops that Jules has got no insurance and no tax. He's got no tax.
That was a really pleasant shock. Thank
well,
you.
Well, if I could say you're welcome, you're incredibly welcome. Now that you've read these diaries back, what do you think you'd say to the younger you?
Oh, that's a good question. Don't change anything, really. I think, all of the darkness, all the dark corners you went to were the right places to go. You know, and all the relationships and everything were the right things, because I'm in a really happy place now, and I wouldn't have got to a happy place if I hadn't gone there.
Yeah.
So I think that was exactly the right place to be.
And what do you think the younger you would say back?
Bollocks. Get a life.
Has it been cathartic in any way?
Yeah, it is. I've just been working on my book, which is an autobiography. So all of this coming at the same time has kind of made me look in the drawers and the cupboards of my mind, you know.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky in that respect. I got diaries. And then when the computer came along, I just wrote everything down on that too. So I got lots of blogs and stuff.
Yeah. Having seen your diaries, though, some of the annotations and the scribbles.
The drawings, yeah.
Yeah, it's like they add to it as much as the other thing. I wonder almost whether, you know, kids undoubtedly that want to keep diaries now will be keeping them digitally.
But which isn't the same, really. Because I think handwriting can explain an emotion more than a typing word can.
Yeah.
So on Facebook, you can say that you feel sad, but it just looks like type.
Yeah.
But if you've seen like handwritten in blood, I feel sad.
It carries a little
extra weight. It carries a little bit more weight, yeah. Maybe that app will come.
The Write in Blood app.
Yes.
When you finish the sentence, it actually dots tears onto it as well, so it's slightly blotchy.
Oh, that sounds good. Sounds good. I like that.
We always ask our guests to choose a song that sums up their teenage years to play us out on. What have you chosen?
Well, when we used to play in the local pubs, one of the covers we used to do as a band is a song called I Saw the Light by Todd Rundgren. And he's somebody that Jules turned me on to. And his albums, his songwriting are just genius. And I've only met him once. I met him in a studio just around the corner from here about 2 years back. And the first thing that struck me about him is how big his hands were. How can he play a guitar with that big, really great big hands?
You hadn't seen his guitar.
Darling.
ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end. So please thank Chris Difford.
Thank you.
My Teenage Diary is a talkback production for BBC Radio 4. It was presented by me, Rufus Hound, and starred guest Chris Difford. Additional material was by Jed Parsons, and the producer was Harriet Jane. I saw
BBC Radio 6 Music presents Pink Floyd's David Gilmour with me, Tom Robinson.
I ought to know how to make a record, but every time I start, I think, no, I haven't got a clue.
Hear my conversation with this refreshingly modest and open pioneer of British music.
The music was the message, and I think the personalities weren't. How I
wish you were here. We discuss the band, new music, and how he discovered Kate Bush.
That was the moment I thought, how can this very young girl be singing something with words as intelligent and supposedly knowing as they were?
Listen now at the Six Music website.
After the news, the Archers, and then Samira Ahmed is here with Front Row, and composer Sir Harrison Birtwistle discusses his music as a season celebrating his 80th birthday begins at London's South Bank Centre. Ian Lee reviews The Grand Master, the new film from Hong Kong director Wong Kar-wai, which traces the life of the Wing Chun Grand Master Ip Man, who taught Bruce Lee. And Boyd Hilton recommends the box sets that should be making their way into stockings this Christmas.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. The independent economic forecaster, the Institute for Fiscal Studies, has warned that the Chancellor's spending plan, set out in the autumn statement yesterday, would require cuts on a colossal scale. George Osborne has insisted that the impact of his proposals has been exaggerated. Tributes are being paid tonight to the former Liberal Party leader Jeremy Thorpe, who's died at the age of 85. He had Parkinson's disease for more than 30 years. The Liberal Democrat leader Nick Clegg said his leadership and resolve played a vital role in the party's fortunes. Police have found the bodies of a mother and her newborn daughter 2 days after they were seen on CCTV, leaving a maternity ward in Bristol ill-dressed for the weather. Detectives confirmed that the body of 30-year-old Charlotte Bevan was discovered on the cliffside of Avon Gorge. Her 4-day-old baby was found close by. A friend of Charlotte Bevan, Tenzin Pinstock, spoke of his shock.
Before this happened, you know, they were all very happy to have children. They were very excited, and we sent our congratulations and all this. And suddenly this happened. I met her partner, Pascal, you know, he's one of my good friends. The last time when I spoke to him, he was asking me to look around the place, and I left my door open and keep the light on in case they might come back.
A coroner has ruled that doctors weren't to blame for the deaths of 2 transplant patients who were given kidneys infected with parasitic worms. Darren Hughes and Jim Stewart died weeks after their surgery at the University Hospital of Wales in Cardiff. Staff said they'd told the men of the donor's brain infection, something their relatives deny. The United States has confirmed that its forces recently tried but failed to free the American journalist Luke Sommers and several other foreigners held hostage by al-Qaeda in Yemen. It said that President Obama authorized the mission. 8 were rescued, but not Mr. Sommers and a number of others. BBC News.
Linda is not feeling very blithe about